Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
A lot of people think the press is opposed to religion. No, many journalists believe that there's good religion and there's bad religion.
Former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright wrote a book. She says, in my generation, diplomats were trained to stay away from religion, but it is too important to do that. The world is religious.
I think Luther hits the nail on the head. He neither needs to improperly elevate Mary as co-redemptrix or the object of our intercession, but neither does he denigrate her. He honors her as the Mother of God.
There are people who have been misled by the ELCA, by the leadership, and by many pastors. And maybe this is our hour that our Lord is calling us to snatch these blessed people that Jesus redeemed out of the fire that is potentially their eternal demise.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
I remember being a little kid in grade school, and we were going to go on a field trip. I had to carry home a parental consent form. My parents had to sign off on something like that. If later years there was an aspirin or some kind of medication needed at school, that also needed a consent form. There is a bill in California, Senate Bill 866, that is trying to eliminate parental consent. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, 25th of August. We'll be talking about a California Senate bill allowing teens to receive vaccines without parental consent. William Estrada of the Parental Rights Foundation will be our guest. Dr. Cameron McKenzie joins us after that. We'll discuss translating the Bible into English. And then Pastor Ted Geese is going to review the TV series now going into its 5th season, Stranger Things. William Estrada is an attorney. He's president of the Parental Rights Foundation. He's author of a column for The Federalist titled, No, the State Shouldn't Cut Parents Out of Medical Decisions for Minors. Will, welcome to Issues Etc.
It's great to be on. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about California Senate Bill 866.
Absolutely, Todd. So it was on January 20th, actually, of this year that Senators Scott Wiener and Richard Pan from the state of California introduced a bill very simply relating to minors and vaccine consent, it said. And what it would have done as initially introduced was allow, quote, a minor 12 years of age or older may consent to a vaccine. And then it went on saying, you know, approved by the FDA. It seemed like a simple bill. It's two paragraphs long. But what it does is it would allow California to say if a minor wishes to get a vaccine, or as originally drafted in age 12, it's just been raised to age 15 because they're struggling to get the votes. It would allow a minor to get a vaccine without the parents knowing about it, without parental consent, essentially behind their parents' back.
You say that this is not an issue of parents versus children. What do you mean by that?
Tom, that's a great question. You know, at Parental Rights Foundation, we're not against vaccines. We're not for vaccines. We simply believe it's not my decision how your children should be raised. You should be talking to your pediatrician. You should be researching it. You should make the best decision for your children. It's the decision that parents make. Some people, and our op-ed that we wrote in The Federalist was responding to the LA Times editorial, and they tried to make it an issue of parents versus teenagers. But, you know, as you asked in that question, it's not an issue of parents versus teenagers. The science shows that 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 13, 14, 15, even up until, you know, 18, 19, even the early 20s, the science shows that brains of young people are still developing. They're still determining these questions of how do I make decisions. The decision-making process is not fully approved. You know, our law recognizes this as well. A 15-year-old can't drive. It's got to be 16. Some states have even started to raise it to 17 in many situations. A 17-year-old can't vape or purchase tobacco. You have to be 18 to enlist in the military. I mean, you have to be 21 in many states to purchase a firearm or to consume alcohol. And it's all because of this recognition that minors are still developing in their brains. And so it's a question of who is going to help a teenager, a young person with this decision-making process. They're still learning. They're still impressionable. They're still developing. And so is it going to be government officials, bureaucrats, maybe public school teachers, public school administrators, social workers? Will it be someone, though, who's employed by the government, who might be well-intentioned, but at the end of the day is still getting a paycheck from the government, who doesn't have that love that a parent does? Or will it be a mom and a dad? Will it be a parent who makes that decision? Or will it be a bureaucrat? And that's why, as I said in the op-ed that was in the Federalist, it's not a parents versus teenagers issue. It's a bureaucrat versus parent issue. Who will be influencing these teenagers, these impressionable young minds, when it comes to, in this issue, vaccines, but a whole lot of other issues when it comes to medical procedures or even just the care and raising and education of children?
You mentioned the Los Angeles Times editorial board. What did they have to say about this bill?
So the LA Times editorial board, it was published on August 19th, so just a couple days ago, and it was kind of amazing the position that they took, because they said, and I'm quoting right from here, "As vaccine misinformation has spread in recent years, parents don't always act in their kids' best interests. False information proliferating on social media has incorrectly linked vaccines to autism, infertility, and even death," end quote. So LA Times is saying we can't trust the parents to make decisions for the children that they love. So trust us, the government, in this case. And that might work, Todd, if not for the fact that so often the government is wrong. I mean, you can look back in history and experimentations that were done by the government on minorities and people of color and Black Americans. You can look at even more recently with the COVID pandemic and so much information that the government said at the very beginning, whether it was Dr. Fauci at the beginning saying, don't wear masks, and then do wear masks, and then President Biden saying vaccines would keep you from transmitting COVID. And now the science shows that that is not the case. And so there's a lot of information that everyone needs to weigh and make decisions. And at the end of the day, at Parental Rights Foundation, I have a very unique and used to be common sense approach that we should trust the parents, not government bureaucrats, to be weighing the information and making the decisions for their children.
You say that the editorial board's opinion runs contrary to the rulings of the U.S. Supreme Court. What do you mean by that?
So, Todd, our country has a history of respect for parental rights. This goes all the way back to almost 100 years. There was a case of Meyer versus Nebraska in 1923, and that was where the U.S. Supreme Court first began to lay out that parental rights are a fundamental right. Fundamental right is the highest protection in our constitutional order. 2 years later, in 1925, in the case of Pierce versus Society of Sisters, the U.S. Supreme Court affirmed that. There was another case, it's called Wisconsin versus Yoder in 1972. As recently as 2000, in the case of Troxell versus Granville, the U.S. Supreme Court said that parental rights are a fundamental right. And there's one case I want to highlight. It was 1979. It's the case of Parham versus J.R. And the U.S. Supreme Court said this, and I love this quote, quote, "The law's concept of the family rests on a presumption that parents possess what a child lacks in maturity, experience, and capacity for judgment required for making life's difficult decisions. More important, historically, it," meaning the United States law, "has recognized that natural bonds of affection lead parents to act in the best interests of their children," end quote. This is 1979, U.S. Supreme Court speaking again in the case of Parham versus J.R. And I think what the U.S. Supreme Court said is so applicable to both the LA Times editorial, SB 866 in California, and the issues that we're wrestling with as a country. Who do we trust? Should it be the government, or do we ultimately trust parents? And Todd, parents are going to make a lot of decisions. We're in a diverse, pluralistic country. You and I might disagree with parenting decisions. You might disagree, Todd, with some parenting decisions I make. I might disagree with parenting decisions that my neighbor makes. But so long as parents are not abusing or neglecting their children, violating the law, violating that, I would say, God-given responsibility to raise and protect our children, then the government stays out of it. And then you have these laws like California SB 866 and LA Times editorial and bills we're seeing around the country that there's no evidence of abuse or neglect. These are loving parents who are just making decisions that are different from what maybe the government or the LA Times editorial board wants. And all of a sudden they're saying, we're going to strip parents out of the equation. This violates the history and tradition of parental rights being fundamental in our country. It violates Supreme Court precedent, like those cases I've discussed. And it's bad for children, frankly.
You want to emphasize that child safety is, in fact, an issue.
Child safety is the most important thing. My wife and I have two kids, 10 and 5, and we've all heard those stories, Todd, of you know, moms running into burning buildings at the expense of their own health and safety. And why do they do that? It's because they love their children. It's because they'd give their life for their children. My dad was a public school educator. We've seen stories of law enforcement or firefighters, sometimes even perfect strangers as well, risking their lives for a child, because all of us have this inherent sense of morality that we'd lay our life down for a child. But a parent, a mom, especially the love that a mom has for a child or a dad has for a child, a parent is going to even more. They're going to have that love for the child, what the Supreme Court said, that natural bond of affection, and they'll lay their life down for the child. And I think it's shameful when we're seeing this approach. I think that's more and more coming in. The LA Times editorial summed it up, but even bills like California SB 866 that are saying, no, we're going to have some paid bureaucrat who is going to be making decisions for a child. And frankly, Todd, I don't think the government has my children's best interests in mind. They're never going to love my children or a child like a mom or a dad, like a parent will. And it's really a fundamental debate that our country is having of who are we going to trust to raise our children. I think back to the book that Hillary Rodham Clinton, when she was first lady, wrote, that it takes a village to raise a child. And the concept of grandparents and community and relatives coming along to help parents in raising children, that's a very good concept. That's something that's rooted in history and tradition. And I think every parent would know that having people alongside to help you is good, but it's not the government. The government is never going to replace the love that a parent has for their child. And that's the debate that we're having in our country. And frankly, I think the LA Times editorial board got it wrong.
Tell us about the case Booth v. Bowser.
So, Todd, this was a case that my organization, Parental Rights Foundation, filed in the District of Columbia, and it's very much relates to the issue of California SB 866, whether minors should be able to consent to vaccinations, and this entire debate that we're having. In 2020, the DC City Council passed the Minor Consent for Vaccinations Act that would allow any child aged 11 years or older to consent to a vaccination without their parents' knowledge or consent. Now, the DC law was in some ways even more egregious on paper than SB 866 is in California, although I know the implementation of SB 866 were it to pass would be just as bad. The DC City Council law prohibited medical providers, school personnel, and even insurance companies from letting the parents know if the child received a vaccination. So our organization, we are dedicated nationwide to protecting and defending parents. We believe that the best way to protect children is by empowering parents. And so we filed a lawsuit in federal district court against the DC Minor Consent to Vaccination Act. And on March 18th of this year, the Federal District Court for the District of Columbia agreed with us and issued a preliminary injunction enjoining the enforcement of the DC law. It was a tremendous victory. The case is still pending. I can't yet, 100% declare victory, but it's an incredible decision in Booth versus Bowser, because the federal court agreed with us that city councils, states cannot be passing laws that strip parents from their ability to be able to raise, educate, care for, be involved in their children's upbringing. And interestingly enough, soon after this preliminary injunction came in, SB 866 was amended to move from 12 years to 15 years, the age of when minors, at least in California, if SB 866 is passed, when they could consent to a vaccination. So even though it was a DC decision, even though it was a DC federal district court, even though it was only a preliminary injunction and the case is still pending, I think it really sent a very powerful message across the country that courts are still going to stand up and protect parental rights. The courts recognize that this is a child safety issue. You know, we raised in our briefing that if minors who are still developing in their wisdom and maturity are being forced to make adult decisions like vaccines and medical care, what happens if a teenager forgets which vaccine they received? What happens if they receive multiple and unnecessary vaccinations? What happens if, God forbid, they suffer an adverse reaction and their parents unaware that they received a particular vaccine at school? And, you know, in DC, the school personnel even being prohibited from telling the parents. What if that were to happen and the parents were unable to provide emergency medical services with accurate and timely information? All of these are issues that arise only if parents are stripped from the traditional role that they have of bringing their children to the pediatrician, talking with the pediatrician, getting the best medical care for them, and when minors are allowed to consent to vaccinations.
Finally, you just said that the best way to protect children is to empower parents. What do you mean by that?
It goes to the fundamental question, Todd, of whose responsibility is it for children? Is it the state's or is it the parents? And in our organization, you know, we've talked about the love that parents have for their children. We've talked about how they would lay down their life to protect their children. We have seen time and time again that, yes, there are those rare situations of abuse and neglect. That's why you need to have laws against that. But the vast majority of parents are fit, loving parents who care for their children, who will dig into these issues of what vaccines should my children receive? When should they receive them? What other care should they get? You know, it's not just vaccines. There's a host of medical care and nutrition and issues that parents need to be involved with. And are we going to trust, you know, a faceless, nameless bureaucrat? Or at the end of the day, are we going to trust parents? And that's why we believe that the best way to protect children is by empowering parents. That's what's worked in our country's history. You go back to Aristotle and the Greek philosophers and their discussion of the family, not the state, being the foundation of civil society. You go back even further to the Jewish and Christian faith traditions of, you know, you read in the book of Deuteronomy, for example, of parents being the ones responsible to raise and educate and nurture their children. You look at that in many other faith traditions in our world as well. And this status notion that it should be government bureaucrats making decisions, because again, it's not minors consenting. Someone's going to be influencing these impressionable young people. So it's a very recent statist notion that parents should be cut out and that it should be bureaucrats. And it flies in the face of common sense, flies in the face of history and tradition, flies in the face of our nation's legal system. And it is contrary to, I think, everything that any parent would want for their own children.
William Estrada is an attorney, president of the Parental Rights Foundation, and author of a column for The Federalist titled, No, the State Shouldn't Cut Parents Out of Medical Decisions for Minors. You'll find a link to this column and to the Parental Rights Foundation at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Will, thanks.
Todd, thank you so much for having me on.
We'll be talking about translating the Bible into English with Dr. Cameron McKenzie of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, next.
In making its decisions, the government shouldn't do so with an eye toward helping one religious sect or another. It should be neutral, and it shouldn't muck about in the affairs of the religious realm.
Former Attorney General Bill Barr speaking at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Their brand of secularism is really about destroying and subsuming the religious sphere altogether. And that's what I say. The threat today is not that religious people are out to establish a theocracy in the United States. It is that militant secularists are trying to establish an atheocracy.
You can watch and listen to a recording of Bill Barr making the case against the progressive assault on the U.S. Constitution from this year's Making the Case conference. It's available in both video and audio formats for a tax-deductible contribution of $300. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Making Disciples for Life. Across the nation, students are back in school in over 1,800 schools serving children in early childhood through high school. Students are thriving in programs of excellence in a safe, caring, Christian environment taught by dedicated teachers. To find a school in your community, visit lcms.org/schools. Connect today for information about a Lutheran school for the children in your family at lcms.org/schools.
It's August, and time to look forward to the academic year. Ad Crucem has just what you need to beautify your classroom, at home or school. We've crafted a series of posters to put what we believe, teach, and confess on display. See our Ten Commandments, Lord's Prayer, Luther's Daily Prayers, Apostles' Creed, Nicene Creed, Athanasian Creed, Liturgical Calendar, and much more. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.